Ahea o ko e ko ka aha. I nā he kuleana i mua o kea aha ho o kolo kolo ki e kie hano hano o ka moku aina o Hawaii. E nao i mai, e malio mai, i lohe ia ka leo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court of the State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and you shall be heard. E noho i lalo. Please be seated.
Let's call the case.
Case number SCWC-17145, Gilbert Malabe versus Association of Apartment Owners of Executive Center. Arguing for the petitioner, David R. Major. Also appearing for the petitioner, Jai Keith Barnes. Arguing for the respondent, Stephen K. S. Chung. Argument on the merits.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Major. Mr. Chung, are you both ready to proceed today?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Major, you've asked for 5 minutes for rebuttal, so we'll give you a warning of 5 minutes to go. Mr. Chung will let you know when there's 10 minutes to go in your period of time.
Thank you.
Very well. Please proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is David Major, and I represent the Association of Apartment Owners of Executive Center. The Association is requesting that the Court overturn the ICA's decision in this matter. Specifically, the Association is requesting that this Court find that the ICA committed grave error when it held that the Association was required to hold a separate written power of sale in order to conduct a nonjudicial foreclosure under HRS 514B146 and 667-5. We are asking the Court to apply newly amended legislation to this matter. Act 282 directly applies to the Malabe's claims in this matter by stating that the obligation that they sought to impose, a separate written power of sale, is not and has never been a requirement for the Association to pursue its nonjudicial foreclosure collection rights.
But does it really affect 667-5? Look, which amendment are you saying gave a power of sale under 667-5?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we're not saying that the amendment confers a power of sale. The legislature's intent in organizing the property regime statute was to afford associations collection rights under all three options that existed at the time: nonjudicial, normal course judicial, and what's referred to as power of sale foreclosure, as plaintiff calls it, part two. When it conferred the nonjudicial foreclosure right, it did so knowing that the security interest was in the form of a statutory lien, not an arm's length negotiated mortgage. When the statutory lien is perfected pursuant to the process in 514B, that's when the legislature provided associations with the authority to use the procedures in 6675. So the security interest is different, but the procedures utilized are what was spelled out in for use by associations in 6675.
But 6675 clearly says power of sale, power sale foreclosure, and 667-1 defined that and continues to define that as a mortgage containing a power of sale. And the legislature's amendment to 667-1 only says for the purposes of Part 6, an association enforces its claim of an association lien regardless of whether the association documents provide for a power of sale. So how does that affect 667-5 as it existed in 2010 for your clients?
2 points, Your Honor. The first is that, as I stated, the security interest that's perfected in this situation, the situation with associations, is different than the arm's length negotiated mortgage. A power of sale is a component specific to that particular security interest. It's a provision that specifies in a written document how non-judicial.
What written document gave you a power of sale in 2010?
Respectfully, the legislature has held that a power of sale was not a requirement.
So your position is actually the legislature didn't even have to amend the law. There's no reason to. Because under your position, it's always been there.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if it's always been there, seems to be attempting to overturn a decision of an appellate court. Can they do that? by legislative history, subsequent legislative history?
Respectfully, Your Honor.
Justice Parker, you're speaking to the mic.
I'm sorry.
I heard your question. Yeah. Respectfully, if the court is raising a separation of powers argument,
well, that's certainly a very interesting proposition that it's not only the court. It's been raised by academic scholars across the country. In fact, this looks like something called retroactive legislative history. Can a new legislature in 2 years come back with new legislative history and say the one 2 years ago was wrong? How many times can this happen?
To respond to your first question, I believe the amendment to clarify the use of power of sale in the course of a association non-judicial foreclosure is appropriate in response to judicial decisions. The amendment does not require the court to specifically find anything with respect to a particular decision or case.
But that's not your position. Your position in your answer to Justice McKenna was, look, it's been there all the time.
The right to conduct non-judicial foreclosure held by the association has always been there.
If the association, as the ICA said in Sakal, if under Part 2 at the time, there was a power of sale in the bylaws or in some other contract or document.
Respectfully, Your Honor, that's not what the legislature has said. The legislature has said that a power of sale was not a component. Instead, they were trying to vest the association with the right to utilize the procedure.
What about the clear language of statutes? What in 514A82B13 says that the power of sale is a part of the bylaws?
It doesn't.
Even without being included in the bylaws.
Respectfully, Your Honor, it doesn't. Because as the legislature has clarified, a power of sale was not a component of the exercise of these rights. The legislature looked at this and it said,
I'm very confused now. What provision are you saying gave an association of power of sale, a non-judicial foreclosure power of sale as of 2010?
A non-judicial foreclosure right was vested with the association pursuant to 514A90 and 514B146. It very clearly provides the associations with all three options for foreclosure: non-judicial, normal course foreclosure, and power of sale. And it says in like manner as a mortgage of real property. It doesn't say as if you have a mortgage. And the reason it says that is because the perfected security interest that's exercised in the non-judicial foreclosure process is different than a mortgage. The legislature recognized that, and it said, hey, courts are coming out and treating this like the lender banking context. That's not appropriate. What is appropriate is to treat it like an association context with a statutory lien and a statutory right to foreclose.
What's your response to the Malabi's argument that there's some substantial differences between Part 1 and Part 2, and while they may not dispute the power of the association to proceed under Part 2, it's Part 1 that they have a concern about. There are some significant differences in 667-40.
Yes, Your Honor. There are significant differences between Part 1 and Part 2, but the fact that the legislature afforded associations three options to foreclose does not mean that one option is to the exclusion of another. So we're not here to question the wisdom of the legislature in the grant of authority to associations. We're here to apply the law. And the law says associations, you can conduct it under any of these formats in like manner as a mortgage of real property, in like manner, not as if you actually hold a mortgage. And that's an important distinction because it mirrors the recent adoption of Act 282. Act 282 says very clearly that a power of sale is not a component of this process. And the reasons for that is because they were trying to create an expedited collection procedure that was fair to the entirety of the community that they're trying to support. There's no dispute that associations are a vital part of housing in the state of Hawaii.
What about the existence of consumer protection? So Part 2 has protections that Part 1 did not have, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. And then if you look at 282, there's a real emphasis on consumer protection, a discussion about the protections that exist under Part 6. How is that consistent with the position you're taking, which is that part one was available to associations too, since it seems in that the legislature, and at least there are parts of the history in 282 that seem to indicate a real emphasis on affording consumers those protections?
I think there's a couple points in there, Your Honor. The first is that I think we have to look at the statute and its application at the time. So the Part 6 analysis, I have no dispute that the law evolved over time and that 667-5 was addressed in 2012, and there were these changes that people are looking at sort of post facto. However, at the time, it was clear that associations had a collection problem, meaning that if they had to conduct a normal course foreclosure, it was going to cost them $25,000 to $30,000. And in an association, that could take you 10, 15 years to accrue, and all the other owners are supporting that cost allocation. So what the legislature did was it said, you know, and I understand some people don't like that, but the legislature said you have carte blanche in order to utilize these three foreclosure procedures under your statutory perfected
without a power of sale and without ever stating that. That's the most remarkable thing in some ways about the argument, it seems to me, is that this was all done without any specificity. And to think that the community wouldn't be involved, I mean, it seems to be totally contradicted on what happened when the legislature did specifically try to address the situation. It wasn't done completely silently. And that's the argument that your folks are trying to make.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I just disagree fundamentally that they were trying to do it silently. The language couldn't be more clear in 514.
Really? The language couldn't be? Is that really the thing you want to argue to us? I mean, the ICA cited all these statutes where the specificity is so explicit. And here we're arguing over words like, oh, procedures must mean they must have the power to. Even though the reference is specifically, you shall follow the procedures of these other sections, that inferentially gave this total absolute power to choose any of the three alternatives and to proceed without a power of sale.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I do think the statute conferring the right to conduct non-judicial foreclosures is clear. It does expressly spell out that each option is available. The question raised by the petitioner is not whether we could conduct non-judicial foreclosure, but whether we were required to have a component of that process that is particular to an arm's length negotiated mortgage, which is a power of sale. So in that issue is resolved by the fact that the language is clear that the AOAO does not hold or does not negotiate rights, but instead it has a statutorily created lien that is perfected through the statutory process. And that's how priority is established. Because of that, the association is then allowed to use the procedures. And there has been no issue raised in this case that the procedures.
Mr. Major, could I ask you for a little clarification about the manner in which the Malabe should have understood this foreclosure, because it appears in their pleadings that they are anticipating that you had made it clear in your notice that you had a power of sale.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
When you filed your notice that you were going to be proceeding with a foreclosure, it seems that the assumption of the Malabes was you were proceeding under a power of sale foreclosure.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that is their assumption that underlies their claim.
And you're saying that that actually wasn't the intent of the association to suggest that it was a power of sale foreclosure?
No.
Because it appeared that they were operating under the assumption that this was a foreclosure pursuant to 667-5.
I believe their assumption, if I may state my opinion on their assumption, I guess, I believe their assumption is that we conducted a non-judicial foreclosure pursuant to Part 1, and their expectation was that we had a power of sale in order to do that. And our position is that no power of sale was required in order to conduct a Part 1 foreclosure.
So if they are able to establish that, given the nature of your notice, that you were taking a position that you did have a power of sale, even though it's your position you never made that, took that position. But nonetheless, if they are, why in that case wouldn't they have a claim in this for wrongful foreclosure?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I would take the position that it's irrelevant whether they believe we claimed we had a power of sale. The legislature made clear in the passage of Act 8282 that the presence or the absence of a power of sale is not part of this process.
Would you agree that you had the option of pursuing a foreclosure based on a power of sale if you had one?
Your Honor, respectfully, I don't see how associations can negotiate mortgage-based powers of sale given the relationship of the parties. It's technically impossible. If the debt obligation accrues, then what do? Go knock on the individual's door, ask them to sign a mortgage when they don't pay their dues? They won't, and people won't be able to collect. Moreover, you can't negotiate a prospective debt obligation that hasn't accrued in the form of a mortgage, and an association doesn't participate in a purchase transaction.
So your position is that an association would never be in a position to be able to pursue a non-judicial foreclosure based on a power of sale?
Not based on a mortgage with a power of sale, no. Well, does it have the power of
mortgage, perhaps, would be an alternative that would be difficult, but what if you just negotiated a power of sale?
Respectfully, Your Honor, the association statutes don't provide an obligation to negotiate a separate written document with an owner, either upon the accrual of a debt obligation or prior to the...
I wasn't suggesting it was required. I'm just saying that that seems to me that wouldn't that be a possibility that there could... And isn't this... I mean, we have a procedure that you acknowledge is available for non-judicial foreclosure based on a power of sale, right?
There was a separate procedure. There were three procedures available.
Yeah, and in your materials, I guess you're taking... I mean, your filings, you're now taking the position that it was clear you didn't intend to suggest that you had a power of sale, correct?
I mean, Your Honor, I think the power of sale issue is resolved by Act 282. That came up in the middle of the case.
Well, that's another issue, Act 282, because I was going to ask you whether you think that Act 282 makes clear that there could not have been a power of sale procedure utilized by the association. In the sense I'm saying, doesn't that beg the question? I mean, the Malabes are saying that seemed that you were pursuing an alternative that was based on a power of sale. So I don't know how Act 282 would affect that if that was the case.
I think 2 points there, Your Honor. I don't think the Malabes are pursuing that we were ever going after a Part 2 power of sale foreclosure. Their position is that we exercise a Part 1 non-judicial foreclosure without a power of sale, as referred to in the definitions that I discussed with Your Honor earlier. I think that that has been addressed specifically by Act 282, and it wasn't addressed in one direction. It was addressed in both directions. It says it doesn't matter whether it exists or not. The point is that it's not a component of the statutory process and the rights that were vested with the association for expedited collection. And we're not here to challenge the wisdom of that process. We're here to apply that law.
Could you one more time respond to Mr. Chung's argument? They agreed Part 2 would have been available, but you went under Part 1. The two sections are different. Among the differences in Part 2, you have 667.40. Which says the power of sale foreclosure under this part may be used in certain non-mortgage situations where a law or a written document contains or authorizes the power of sale. So how do you distinguish? What's your response to their argument that, yeah, maybe you had a power of sale foreclosure right under Part 2 but not under Part 1?
I think there's two responses. One, the Part 2 is permissive. It has May language in the section you just read. And the May language was intended to show that it was an alternative option. And so if you combine that May language with 514B146 that afforded the association all three options, it makes perfect sense that the association may exercise that provision because they were afforded the authority under an entirely separate statutory construct. And I think that's really important because when comparing banks and the financial industry to the association context, what are you missing in the banking lender industry? You're missing 156 statutes that define the rights and responsibilities of the parties when they agree to be bound by that relationship in the specific purchase they make. They're not buying a single family home. They're not buying any other alternative form of housing. They're buying condominiums. And that comes with various rights, but it also comes with a lot of responsibilities. And that's the obligation of the owner. That's what the legislature.
There are single family homes that are in associations. Mililani Town being a very good example of that. There's a lot of association disputes in some of these planned unit developments.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I wasn't talking about the form of the home. I was talking about the construct that governs it.
Okay.
So
You did use the phrase single-family home. That's why I was trying to point that out.
Yes, you're right. That's a fair clarification. The structure is not important. The property regime is what's important for the court. And,
in 1998, the legislature added 667-40 to Part 2.
Yes.
Until then, 667-40 Part 667 Part 2 was clearly only applied to mortgages also. But the legislature did not add a similar provision to Part 1.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. What's the question?
Isn't that right? So why are you saying that the legislature intended to allow the procedures under Part 1, 667-5, when they explicitly amended Part 2 to add 667-40 that says, even though this section, by its language, you know, clearly only applies to mortgage foreclosures, we're going to allow it for non-mortgage situations. But they didn't include that language in Part 1.
Well, I think respectfully, you can't read the addition. It's our position that you can't read the addition of 667-40 in isolation. It has to be read with the statutory construct in 514B146. And the legislature.
When was 514B146 passed?
I don't have that date right off the top of my head.
I thought it was 2004.
That may be right, Your Honor. So subsequent to the passage of 667-40, the legislature makes clear that all three options are available to the association in order to conduct non-judicial.
I'm sorry, you keep saying all three options.
Yes.
The language of 667-146 doesn't say three options, does it?
514B146?
B146, yes.
Yes, it says non-judicial, it says action, and power of sale.
Right. So where is the all three that you are referring
non-judicial
to?
Non-judicial is 667-5, power of sale is 40, and action is by the rest of the statute.
I'm sorry, we're talking about 514B146, where does that refer to all three?
514B146, in about halfway down the paragraph, the large paragraph.
It says the lien of the association may be foreclosed by action or by non-judicial or power of sale foreclosure procedures set forth in Chapter 667.
That's right.
Okay, so you're saying non-judicial foreclosure action?
Yes. Non-judicial.
Or by non-judicial or power of sale.
Yes.
Okay, so you're saying that non-judicial means?
Respectfully, Your Honor, there are other portions of 514B that expressly provide that non-judicial notice requirements, and then it puts 667-5 after it.
So well, what
that's the way
you're saying it's. I just want to make, I'm just trying to make sure we are clear on this language. The lien of the association may be foreclosed by action, that's a foreclosure
normal
lawsuit,
course.
Or by non-judicial or power of sale foreclosure procedure set forth in Chapter 667.
Yes.
And you're saying that that refers to 667-5 as well as?
40. Yes.
Okay, 667-5 was entitled foreclosure under power of sale. It wasn't referred to as non-judicial foreclosure.
I would agree, Your Honor, but common parlance at the time was that 667-5 was the non-judicial foreclosure statute. Power of sale foreclosure was the Part 40. statute. And so that's...
Okay. Is there some case law or some legislative history that says that?
I can...
Non-judicial means?
I can... It doesn't
667-5 and power of sale foreclosure means 667-40?
I can refer you to cases where 667-5 was analyzed as the non-judicial foreclosure statute. Yes. I can refer you to portions of 514B where there are notice requirements that stem from 667-5 and it's characterized as the non-judicial foreclosure.
Is there anything in committee reports in 2004 when 514B-146 was passed that says that the legislature intends to allow the procedures under 667-5?
Well, I think the express language provides that, Your Honor.
I'm just saying, do they refer specifically to 667-5? Is there anything in the legislative history when it was passed in 2004 that refers to 667-5?
Most of the items in the legislative committee reports have to do with providing associations with efficient remedies.
So the answer is no?
It does. I don't have a recollection that there's a specific reference to 667-5, no.
Okay.
But there are numerous references in 514B that identify 6675 as the non-judicial.
I'm sorry?
For notice requirements in subsequent portions of 514B,
yes,
subsequent to 146, I believe it's the latter part of 146, maybe some of 147, but the notice requirements in there say 30 days from a 6675 non-judicial foreclosure. But in any event, to answer your question, I don't have a firm recollection of whether a committee report includes reference to that.
Mr. Turner, I have a question regarding Act 282.
Yes, Your Honor.
In the preamble, the preamble states that 236, Act 236 provided a statutory grant of power for condominium associations to utilize non-judicial foreclosure under 667-5 and 667-40. But other than that, there's no reference to, well, if you tell me, it doesn't appear to be there's any other reference to 667-5, and it doesn't refer specifically to powers of sale.
It does not, Your Honor. I believe the amendment in the change is with respect to 514B-146 and saying that they could exercise the option with or without a power of sale. I think what they were trying to do is say, you know, 667-5 is no longer used.
Right.
And so we need to address this issue, and we're entitled to.
So is this, well, however this case arose when it did exist.
So, I'm sorry.
I mean, this case arose under 667-5, right?
That's correct.
And clearly the title of the statute is foreclosure under power of sale.
Yes.
So does that pose a problem for you? Because this is a prior law that's been repealed.
I don't think it does, because if you do the analysis with the laws that were in effect at the time, then I think the laws line up as I've discussed with the other justices.
So do you read out power of sale on this as the statute was at the time that you filed your claim? Do you read power of sale out of the title of the statute then?
No.
Because it says foreclosure under power of sale.
I fully understand that, but I believe there are portions of the statute that make clear that 6675 is the non-judicial reference. Moreover, all cases dealing with this subject matter have treated 6675 as non-judicial foreclosure. And the reality
it's non-judicial foreclosure, but your question is whether or not you need to have a power of sale.
I do admit that that's the question that's raised,
yeah,
by the ICA's decision, and my position is that Act 282 addresses that on point. Now, what they did was, in Act 282, they went to 514B, they said there's the three options, and you can use them with or without a power of sale. And what they did was, is if you go to the end of the statute, they use the second, I believe it's the second to last paragraph, and they say this applies retroactively to 6675. And so that's what they're trying to do, is they're basically saying, okay, we're using the statutory construct that we intended to use 514B to amend or to change or to clarify. But what we're doing here is we're putting in the second to last section that it applies retroactively to 6675.
I'm sorry, where does it say that?
Where is that?
Oh, I see, Section 5.
Yeah, Section 5. It says it applies retroactively to 6675. So I think what they were doing is we have a cleanup issue. How do we take one set of laws and make sure they refer to another? And that's how they did it.
Okay.
I don't know that that was the best choice, but I think it is clear.
But it also says this act shall not be applied to impair any contract existing as of the effective date of this act in a matter violative of the contracts clauses of the federal and state constitutions.
Yes, Your Honor. It absolutely does say that, and I don't think there is a single issue in this case that that raises a vested contractual right. In fact, what he's arguing is the absence of a term that would be negotiated in an arms-length mortgage. That's not a vested
contract. We have case law saying that judicial constructions of statutes statutes are incorporated into contracts, right?
If that were the case, then the statute that's incorporated is the one that says my side wins. And so respectfully, we think the outcome can't turn on the contracts clause analysis.
So basically you're saying, all right, so in terms of statutory construction, the first rule is you go by the plain language of the statute.
Yes.
Right? The plain language of 667-5 in 2010 did not allow a foreclosure under a nonjudicial power of sale foreclosure unless you were a mortgagee. That's very clear. The clear language of 667-5 as under the 667-1 definition. The clear language of Part 2 under 667-40 allowed it, if it was in the bylaws. You are saying, it seems to me you are asking us to disregard the fundamental rule of statutory interpretation, which is you go by the clear language of the statute.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think I'm asking you to do that. What I'm asking you to do is to read 6675 in conjunction with the statutory construct.
If the legislature hadn't passed 667-40 in 1998, perhaps then we have an absurdity, because then in 514B146, they said you can exercise your rights under 667-4, your rights under 667, Chapter 667. But Chapter 667, Part 2, did allow it. So therefore, it's not absurd. But I'm having a lot of difficulty with your argument, obviously, saying that we should ignore the clear language of the statute.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I'm out of time, but we would disagree that I'm asking you to ignore the plain language. We are requesting that the court read the language together with 514B146 to come out to the determination that the legislature just adopted in 282.
Very well.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Good morning, Chief Justice, Associate Justices. I'm Stephen Chung. I represent the plaintiff, appellant, and now respondent, Malabis. I'd like to jump into this discussion and answer or try to clarify some of the issues that the court is raising. And I think the best place to start is in 1998. In 1998, the authority of an association to enforce its lien was contained in 514A90. 514A90 was replaced subsequently, 2006, I think, or later, by 514B146, but they're identical. And so my comment relating to 514A90 does apply to 514B146. In 1998, 514A90 said the lien has to be enforced by action in like manner as a mortgage of real property. Associations were not given special treatment. They had to enforce the lien like other mortgage holders. The foreclosure statutes are contained in Chapter 667, and in 1998, it consisted of 667.1 through 10. 667.1 was foreclosure by action. 667.5, the statute that we are here to discuss, provides that when a power of sale is contained in a mortgage, the mortgagee or the assignee or successor desiring to foreclose upon a breach of the condition may give the notices of default and an intention to sell, and to give the notices and do the acts required by the mortgage. That was the non-judicial foreclosure statute that was enacted in 1874, 26 years after the great Maheri, and has been criticized as the law that allowed land to be taken from Native Hawaiians. In 1998, the legislature considered whether to allow condominium associations to conduct non-judicial foreclosures. And as this court has observed in Ames Funding versus Moores, the legislature was very concerned about collection abuse. And the legislature says in its comments, which the court quoted in Ames versus Moores, that the legislature found that the existing law 6675 did not contain sufficient consumer safeguards that were needed to protect the rights of consumers. And so the legislature in 1998 could have easily said, if it wanted to allow associations to use 6675, go ahead and use it. Well, just amend 514A90 and allow you to use it. But they didn't do that. They didn't do that because it didn't contain the consumer safeguards that they felt was necessary to protect consumers. So they created Part 2 by enacting Act 122 in 1998, creating Part 2 codified at 66721 through 42. And so 66740 was created as part of Act 122 in 1998. It was not amendment to an existing statute. And Part 2 contains numerous consumer safeguards, such as under the old law, if there was no time requirement in your mortgage, you could say you're in default, publish notice for 3 successive weeks, and hold your option no less than 14 days later, 36 days start to finish. And if one of my clients is deployed overseas because he's a member of the military on active duty and doesn't read the newspaper, he's not going to get notice that you're selling his home. The legislature felt that that was not fair, so they said, under Part 2, you have to serve a notice of default, but you serve process, and give the homeowner 60 days to cure the default. And if you don't cure the default within 60 days, yes, association, you can do your public sale after you've given your notice and publications. But if you do the public sale, you waive any deficiency. So if you get a dollar and you're owed $10,000, you waive that deficiency. Under Part 1, the creditor does not waive the deficiency if they do a non-judicial foreclosure. So there's great differences between Part 1 and Part 2. And the legislature wanted to make sure that associations could not use Part 1. And so they said in 66740, which is also the enabling statute, that a power of sale under this part, Part 2, may be used in certain non-mortgage situations where a law or a written contract contains, provides a power of sale, a power of sale remedy, a power of sale foreclosure, or a non-judicial foreclosure. These laws or written documents are limited to timeshares, condominium projects, and agreements of sale. So the legislature is saying to associations, your lien is a non-mortgage. It is not a mortgage. You cannot use Part 1. So that's the picture in 1998. The association has been given Part 2 to use with all its consumer safeguards. There is nothing in 1998 that suggests that having enacted Part 2, and by the way, they call it the old law 6671 through 10, Part 1, there's nothing that suggests that an association could use 6675, which is contained in Part 1. The legislature specifically allowed associations to use Part 2, which they created in 1998. But there was a flaw because after enacting Act 122, they did not amend 514A90, and it continued to say that the lien had to be enforced by action. So in 1999, the very next year, the legislature passed Act 236. And what Act 236 did was it said it amended 514A82B by adding Section 13, which says that the lien created by Section 514A90 may be enforced by action or by nonjudicial foreclosure procedures authorized by Chapter 667, and this language is deemed to be incorporated into all bylaws of condominium associations. So I gave them the written contract, the written document allowing for nonjudicial foreclosures. And it also amended 514A90 to say that the lien can be enforced by action or by nonjudicial foreclosure procedures in Chapter 667 in like manner as a mortgage. And by doing so, the legislature intended to correct the deficiency in 514A90 to say that, yes, you can conduct nonjudicial foreclosures pursuant to the authorized procedures in Chapter 667.
With or without a power of sale in the bylaw?
Your Honor, I have to confess that when I first went down this journey, I read the statutes as saying you can do a nonjudicial foreclosure because if you have a contract or if there is a law, you can use this part. So I read it as saying that you could use that part, but
without a power of sale.
But after reading Sakal, my opinion has changed, because when you read 514A90, it just says you're authorized to use this part. But what is a power of sale? 66710 suggests that a power of sale is a power of attorney. 66710 talks about if you transfer the property, you do not defeat the power of attorney that the mortgagee has to conduct the sale. So the legislature, way back, 66710 has existed, I'm not sure, over 100 years, says that a power of sale is a power of attorney, and at least it implies that.
Could I interrupt you just for a moment, Mr. Chung, while you're on that point? So with respect to your clients, when they saw the notice, what was their understanding of whether the foreclosure was proceeding based on a power of sale?
Well, Your Honor, they did not understand what was happening. Here the association's attorney was publishing a notice and telling them that there's going to be this foreclosure of this property pursuant to this right that the association claimed it had. And it wasn't until many years later that, having read some of the cases that I filed, that was not true, that the association does not hold a mortgage, much less a mortgage containing a power of sale.
Mr. Chung, if you're saying that a power of sale is the same, well, they meant it to be the same thing as a power of attorney?
That's what 66710 implies.
If that's true, then what of Mr. Major's argument that what is the likelihood of them ever to get a power of attorney from a condo owner who has not?
I suggest that there's a procedure for amending your declarations or your bylaws, and if you get the appropriate vote from your condominium association members, you could acquire that power of sale, the power of attorney. So what happened by the enactment of...
Can I just clarify one more thing?
Sure.
I just want to make sure I understand. I thought I earlier heard you say that the power of sale was incorporated into the bylaws. You didn't mean to say that.
No, it's the language of 514A82B13 was incorporated into the bylaws, but it merely authorizes...
How is that?
But the statute specifically says that this language is deemed incorporated into the...
Oh, I'm sorry. Where does it say that? In what year?
In the statute, in 514A82B13.
514A82B13. Okay. Please keep going. I'll check.
So... the result of Act 236 is that associations in 1999, if they held a mortgage, could do a judicial foreclosure, or they could use Act 6675 or Part 2. If they didn't have a mortgage, then they were required to use Part 2, provided that they had that power of sale. But there is nothing in the legislative history that indicates that the legislature ever intended to allow condominium associations to use 6675. In 2011, when a moratorium was placed on its use, it was referred to as the most draconian nonjudicial foreclosure process in the country. And then in 2012, when it was repealed, there were further comments that expressed the feelings of the legislature that they did not like 6675. And with this legislative history, it is.
But you're talking about legislative history post hoc, after it was passed. Is that what you just said? Because if you're going to do that, then you can look at 282.
I will, Your
which Honor. Clearly what the legislature is trying to also interpret what it meant.
Right. And that's where I'm going to go, Your
Honor. All right.
I want to get back to this 514A82B.
Yes.
You're saying B13 says that the power sale is automatically incorporated into bylaws?
The language in that statute is deemed incorporated.
Where does it say that? The statute says, in addition to the requirements of subsection A, subsection A says the bylaws shall provide for at least the following, board of directors, et cetera. Subsection B says, in addition to the requirements of subsection A, the bylaws shall be consistent with the following provisions. B13, a lien created pursuant to section 514A may be enforced by the association in a manner permitted by law, including nonjudicial or power sale foreclosure procedures authorized by chapter 667. The statute says, provisions of this shall be deemed incorporated into the bylaws existing. Okay, I get it. Okay. So you don't need it. So Sokal was wrongly decided.
The authority to use part two, the authority to do a nonjudicial foreclosure, that's what it's giving them. But it doesn't grant them the blanket power of sale or the power of attorney that they need in order to exercise that right.
I'm sorry. Repeat that. I want to make sure I understand.
You're saying 667-40, part two, says a power of sale foreclosure procedure under this part may be used where a law, which is 514A90, or a written document, which is the bylaw, provides for a power of sale, a power of sale remedy, a power of sale foreclosure, or a nonjudicial foreclosure.
So, and Sokal held that even for part two, it had to be actually be in the bylaws.
You have to hold the power of attorney, the power of sale. The statute itself doesn't grant that to you. And this court has held.
I'm sorry, I'm very confused because Sokal said that it had to be actually in the bylaws, didn't it?
That's correct. And the distinction is that there is the remedy, which is being referred to as a nonjudicial foreclosure or a power of sale foreclosure. That's the remedy. But to exercise that remedy, you have to hold that power of attorney.
So in your view, when the legislature passed Act 282, was it just addressing that holding of Sokal, or was it going and more sweepingly confirming the point of view that Mr. Major has articulated, that there all along was a very broad delegation of authority to the association that would include 6675?
I believe, Your Honor, it was an attempt to do that, but it didn't go as far. It was an attempt to eliminate the claims for wrongful foreclosure that I had been bringing.
What could the legislature have done? You said it didn't go as far as it, I guess.
Well,
it
first
have.
Of all, it didn't provide the associations with a mortgage. 6675 says you need to hold a mortgage, and Santiago says you need to hold a mortgage that contains a power of sale. And Lee versus HSBC Bank says there is no statute that grants a power of sale. So the legislature will have to ignore judicial pronouncements of this court and make its own law and says that you're wrong. Back in 1999, when we enacted Act 236, we granted a power of sale to these associations, and we allowed them to use 6675 even though they didn't hold a mortgage. So it attempts to do that, but it doesn't. It doesn't address the issue of you need to hold a mortgage that contains a power of sale in order to use 6675.
Do you think they could have done that by statute?
I think it would have been unconstitutional, Your Honor.
I mean, they could have retroactively created a statute, but didn't the concern – I mean, they could retroactively say we're going to pass a statute and its effective date is 25 years ago. I mean, the problem is who's going to pay for all these wrongful disclosure claims if they had done it in that process?
I suppose they could have done that. I mean, the statute was repealed. 6675 was repealed, so you cannot amend a repealed statute. Of course, you can reenact it.
You can't amend a repealed statute. So the legislature couldn't have amended 667-5 to get rid of the requirement of power of sale.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct.
But they did say in the act that it meant to apply to in Section 5.
It does say
it
that,
shall reply retroactively to Section 667-5.
It does say that, Your Honor.
And what's your interpretation of that?
Well, I have two comments to that. One is that it's unconstitutional if it is actually deemed to do that. But first of all, it quotes language from 667-40, but leaves out that important first clause, which says that a power of sale foreclosure under this part may be used. And it said back in 1999, when we enacted 667-40, we intended to allow condominium associations to use any nonjudicial foreclosure procedure, not just limited to Part 2. Well, that's wrong. And this court in the Del Rio versus Crace case has said it's for the court to interpret legislation, and the legislature may attempt to say what they intended back then, but that doesn't count. It's the pronouncements of this court that counts. And in the Koike case, I believe, if the legislative history shows that you are wrong, legislature, 2019 legislature, then we can declare that you are wrong. So the legislature may attempt by deleting that first phrase out of 667-40 to pretend that back in 1999 its intentions was to allow condominium associations carte blanche authority to use either 667-5 or Part 2, but we know from the legislative history that that's not true. The wording of the statute itself says a power of sale foreclosure under this part. How do you ignore that?
So under this part, and I realize that that's not what we're dealing with here in terms of Part 1. But in terms of Part 2, did Sakal address the incorporation language?
It did, Your Honor. And what Sakal said was that although the legislature authorized condominium association to conduct nonjudicial foreclosures, where the bylaws or the a statute existed allowing or nonjudicial foreclosure, the legislature did not grant a blanket power of sale to condominium association over all units. And so you don't hold that power of sale to exercise the right that was granted to you. And okay. It was on that basis, Your Honor, that my case, the Malabi case, was reversed, as we know that we filed a suit for wrongful foreclosure. The trial court dismissed my complaint. We appealed. The ICA reversed it after Sakal on the basis of Sakal that you don't hold a power of sale. Therefore, you could not conduct a nonjudicial foreclosure. Because
the lien only applies to certain units? I'm a little bit confused. The lien applies to all units? Why isn't the power of sale there? I'm so sorry. I'm a little bit confused here. So even though the statute says the power of sale is, this provision is incorporated into the bylaws?
It's the authority to conduct a power of sale foreclosure. It's what's been granted.
Okay. I see.
May I follow up and ask a question?
Okay,
about,
I see, all right.
If the AOAO was to use Part 6 and to file an affidavit under 667-101, are you with me?
Yes.
Okay. That statute, so if they were to use that alternative to go under Part 6 and they filed an affidavit, the affidavit states that the association shall sign an affidavit under penalty of perjury stating that the power of sale foreclosure was made pursuant to the power of sale provision in the law or association document. Now, what I didn't, maybe I'm missing something, but if in fact it's in the law already, why would you file an affidavit stating that it's in the law? And if it's in the documents already under the bylaws, why would you file an affidavit that's already, I mean, why would they require you to state something that's in the law that's already in the law?
Your Honor, just, Paul, you raised two points that I'd like to try to address them. I think, number one, we have to recognize that a nonjudicial foreclosure is a private self-help remedy over which no court supervises what goes on. And for that reason, the legislature and this court has attempted to protect consumers, homeowners, by making sure that the power of sale was exercised properly, and that arises in the Ulrich decision and the Kondar versus Matsuyoshi decision, recognizing that a non-judicial foreclosure is a private self-help remedy over which there is no judicial supervision. So, creditor, we are going to make sure that you act in a trustee-like capacity, and that you do what is required to obtain an adequate price for the property, that you make sure that your notices are appropriate, et cetera. So there is that portion. There's no judicial supervision, so it's private self-help. And so in order to, well, the title companies may have an issue with this at this point in time, but in order to show that you've got good title, you have to do something. You filed that notice of lien, which the statute gives you the right to file, and now you have foreclosed that lien using a process that the legislature apparently has given to you, and now you are filing an affidavit saying, I've completed the process. I filed the lien, I published the notices that the statutes require, and here's the affidavit so that my title should be good. And that is the reason for that. The other part of the question that I think you are touching upon, Justice Pollack, is that Act 282 appears to me, at least, to change the playing field, whereas previously, in order to conduct a non-judicial foreclosure, a mortgage holder had to have a power of sale, power of attorney, provision authorizing them to act. And I suppose the 2019 legislature is saying, we're going to do away with all that, and we're going to allow sales, public sales, without court supervision, as a matter of law. We're just going to allow condominium associations to sell the homes that belong to their unit owners. And you don't need a power of sale anymore. And I think that that's what 282 does. And if the legislature wants to say that the moon is made of green cheese, I suppose they can do that.
Well, Mr. Chung, you're asking us to tell the legislature that they weren't telling the truth when they said that they meant, when they look back on the statute that they passed it at previously, that they meant for it to apply to this situation.
They must have misconstrued the statute, Your Honor. They must have misconstrued the statute.
I heard you, but you're saying that you want us to tell them they misconstrued their own statute?
We don't need to go that far, Your Honor. The court can merely find that 6675 required a mortgage that contained a power of sale.
Well, is the answer really that we're not saying that they're telling the truth, but really what we're saying that this undermines separation of powers, and this is why, not only that, it allows revisionists of history. I mean, the United States Supreme Court has really commented on subsequent legislative history. I mean, we have observed that on more than one occasion, interpretation given by one Congress to an earlier statute is of little assistance. And, you know, there's quote after quote about subsequent legislative history, setting dangerous precedent, allowing, you know, what it really does is it allows, after every election, to allow one legislature to say what another legislature did or didn't do, composed of different individuals.
You're exactly right, Justice Paulus, and that's why in the Del Rio decision, this court said the legislature cannot force the judiciary to construe a statute in accordance with legislative interpretation. The legislature can't force you to accept their interpretation, nor can the legislature effect a change in the construction of a statute by a later declaration of what it originally intended, which is what they're attempting to do. An erroneous opinion of an existing law by the legislature does not alter it. That's what's happening here, Your Honor.
You're saying we should give no effect to it? What effect should we give?
Well, Your Honor, to the extent that it is appropriate to do a non-judicial foreclosure as the legislature has now defined it, allowing condominium associations, but not mortgage holders, to do a non-judicial foreclosure even though they don't hold a power of sale, on a prospective basis, on a going forward basis, so that Part 2 can be used or Part 6 can be used, you know, I don't have a quarrel with that. My quarrel is with Part 1.
But should we address that? It's not before us. Those aren't the facts of this case.
Well, Your Honor, they've raised the issue.
This case is under Part 1.
They've raised the issue, and they've taken the position, they being the defendant association, that Act 236 gave them all of these rights, and Act 236 gave them all of these rights, the carte blanche authority to use whatever procedure they felt like, and Act 282 just merely confirms that, and I suppose the court could address the issue in that way. I was going to go into my constitutional arguments, but I think Justice Pollack is way ahead of me on that, so I'm going to stop my discussion at this point, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that the court may have.
So is your, in your view, Act 282 did or did not change the way of the land with regard to Part 1?
It did not, because it doesn't provide the mortgage that they need. You know, I also argued in my brief, I believe, that how can you retroactively provide the power of sale that a repeal statute requires? But that's an intellectual discussion that I didn't get into because, you know, you didn't provide the mortgage, and so we can leave it at that. But you can't repeal or you can't amend a statute that's already been repealed. So, you know, how do you provide the power of sale that you needed in order to use a statute that was already repealed? That's retroactive legislation, I believe, is improper. We pointed that out in the one of the cases, Kaha Ohanahana case, I believe, that retroactive legislation is that affects the substantive rights of parties is improper. Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Wilson, do you have a question?
Well, what I was thinking, Mr. Chung, is it appears that Mr. Major is saying that Act 282 just affirmed the usage of Part 1 that was anticipated by associations, that associations could always proceed with a non-judicial foreclosure without a power of a sale in the sense that be very clear that they couldn't get a power of sale to begin with. So why would the statute be interpreted that way?
That's the argument that Mr. Majors and the other defendants have to take, because there really is no way to explain, if you look at the legislative history of how Act 122 came about and how it called the lien a non-mortgage and 6675 requires a mortgage. You can't explain if the legislature in 1998 did not intend for you to use Part 6675, how do you interpret Act 236 as giving you that right, where the legislature clearly said in 1998, we don't want you to use 6675, you don't hold a mortgage. So in order to make that argument, they have to turn a blind eye to the legislative history, to the words of 6675 that says a power, when a power of sale is contained in a mortgage, and they have to turn a blind eye to 66740 that says your lien is not a mortgage. Thank you.
In your view, that was a conscious choice to lay off of Part 1? Or
definitely,
Your Honor. Wanted to affect Part 1 but just didn't do it the way you think?
In my view, it was a conscious choice, Your Honor. I think that what the defendant associations were thinking is that where's the harm? The homeowners owe the money, and even if we do a wrongful foreclosure, there's no equity in these properties. What's the harm if we violate their rights? That's what I believe happened, Your Honor.
They had this, at that point, an anticipated tortious claim?
They were looking at the wrongful foreclosures across the other 48 states where you've got deeds of trust and you've got different theories and where the courts have said, if there's no equity, then you haven't suffered a wrong, so therefore you can't bring a claim for wrongful foreclosure. Those 48, the decisions from those jurisdictions don't apply in Hawaii. Hawaii is strict liability. If you violate the rights of the homeowner or you don't comply with the statute under Ulrich and Condor, that's wrongful foreclosure. You know, if you take someone's property without using the correct law, I submit that's a conversion. Thank you,
Your Honor. Mr. Major, very briefly.
Quickly, I'd like to state that with respect to statutory interpretation and legislative history, I don't want the court to ignore that there are two well-supported and with great differences interpretations of the legislative history. If you look at the order of the statutes, there are numerous times when the legislature either readopts or reaffirms 514B146 subsequent to the addition of 66740, and all three options are afforded under that statute. It can easily be interpreted that the legislator made a conscious decision to affirm that associations were afforded all three options under the law. I think, just to address quickly Justice Pollack's issue, I think separation of powers, that type of constitutional challenge is not appropriate here because the legislature is entitled under various cases to review the landscape of the law and to adjust and address it. It is not entitled to direct the courts to a specific outcome in a specific case, and that's not what has happened here. Instead, it is said that it is clarified that a right that existed in favor of the association still exists to this day, and that's how the statute should be read. So that's our position, Your Honor. If the court doesn't have any questions.
Thank you.
Very well. Thank you to both of our attorneys for your argument today.
Iku iluna, he writes, Ua ho'okolo ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolo kolo ki eke hanohano. This Honorable Supreme Court is now recessed.